And you're going to find, if you're normal, which you are, that they go in cycles sometimes. We are very happy with our circumstances. Sometimes we are on at the top of a cycle of them, and it seems like we have maybe things are going well for us, and we're life looks rosy and things are good. And sometimes we're in a valley, and we're just confused with our circumstances. We don't know, things are just not going well. And sometimes we're bored with circumstances. We're bored with where we are. It's just boring. And sometimes we're angry with where we find ourselves. Is there a rhyme or a reason for the circumstances that we find ourselves in? You know, for us, we don't understand all of God's plan. We don't understand it. To us, it looks like God maybe has a dice or a wheel or something that he figures out that Jason gets this today and Sam gets this and George gets that, and that's what we find. But God isn't that way. God is sovereign, and God is a God of order. And there is a reason for what he does. Even though we don't understand it, God does. But for us, when life is low and our circumstances are bleak, do we still believe and trust in a sovereign God? You know, when circumstances are bleak and we're angry or confused or sad, we can't really see past the next step. We don't have interest in looking ahead 10 years, and we don't have really interest in looking ahead next week even. We're just holding on to one more step. But once we get through this low point, and we look through or get through, and we can look back from the perspective of a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, we can see how it affects our character. We can see how our life has changed because of going through some of these negative things. Our worldview and our outlook are actually shaped by the trials that we face. And trials are called trials because they test our character. That's why they're called them. And just like a potter takes clay and stretches it and squeezes it and pulls it apart and pulls rocks out of it and pulls hair out of it and pulls whatever you find in clay, sticks, and keeps working it. And as he does it, the clay, it can be a hard, cold lump of clay, fairly dry, but he can add a little bit of water to it. He twists it, turns it, shapes it, pulls it, puts it back together, rolls it. It gets softer and it gets more workable and more moist, and then he can shape it how he wants to. And God does the same thing with us. He takes us. Sometimes when we think our circumstances are really good, for God's purposes, we're a cold lump of clay with a few rocks and sticks and hairs in it. I'm not sure the best way is to go about doing this, but I've titled the message, "For Such a Time as This." And those words come out of the book of Esther. They are relevant to us in the sense that we find ourselves on this earth at a specific place today, a specific time today, in specific circumstances today. And we are here because God has a purpose and a reason for putting us here, but we don't know what that is. Now, the thought I'd like to leave with us, or the thing to think about, is the thought of responsibility and accountability. And to turn, you can turn to Matthew 25. I want to read a few verses there. But accountability, responsibility is... Responsibility is the task that is given to us. Responsibility is what we is the way we should live, or the duty or fulfillment or obligation that we have to live. Now, we have a choice. God has given us this life, and he's given us the choice and the freedom to choose how we execute these responsibilities. So, when we find ourselves in these circumstances, we have a choice to respond any way we want to. God gives us that choice. And God just gives us the freedom to be angry, to be confused, to turn our back on him if we want to. He gives us the choice to do whatever we want to. But he also, with that freedom of choice, comes a long word called accountability. And accountability is like... test results for how we did or used this responsibility. How we fulfilled this responsibility, he holds us accountable for it. Now, with that, There are ways he holds us accountable for them, but he also makes it possible that we can do a reset sometimes. All of us have made mistakes, and with this choice that we have made mistakes. But God gives us the ability and the tools and the way to experience forgiveness and to start over. And we're accountable for how we use that as well. Anyway, Matthew 25, verse 14. This is some verses that illustrate accountability and responsibility here. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. To every man according to his several ability, and then the man left and went on a trip. Then he that had received the 5 talents, or had received the most responsibility, went and traded with the same, and made with them other 5 talents. And likewise, he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliveredst unto me 5 talents. Behold, I've gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. And then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid. And went and hid your talent in the earth. And that way you have it back again. You can have it. His Lord answered and said unto him, You wicked, or thou wicked and slothful servant. Thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now these are Jesus' words, and he's telling a parable here. As the kingdom of heaven is like, or how the kingdom of heaven is like. And we have been given various responsibilities. Some of us have been given much responsibility. Some have, but all have been given some. There's varying degrees of responsibility. And responsibility is, with that responsibility comes accountability. In 1 Corinthians, I think it's in 1 Corinthians, it says that, you know, it's required in stewards that a man be found faithful. And it also says that the Bible also says that from whom much is given, much will be required. There's a relationship between the amount of responsibilities that we have and the privilege that we have and what our responsibility is. Now, the more responsibility, the more accountability we have. I'd like to think, you know, we are given a choice in how we use the time that we are given. Some of us have been born into a Christian home. By being born into a Christian home, we by default have knowledge that somebody would not have, that would be ignorant of the things that we have just naturally been taught. So that would equate to us having more responsibility, wouldn't it? We have more responsibility. We have more time because we don't have to learn some of the things other people would learn. But we tend to become a little bit like the one talent man, because we bury some of our gifts, bury some of our knowledge, we bury some of our responsibility. We bury it so that because we have other things to do. We're given a choice in how we use the time that we are given. We are given, God tells us how our use affects our eternal destiny. He tells us all about this up ahead of time. And he gives us the opportunity to erase bad choices. But also in the circumstances that we find ourselves, we're given small tests along the way. In the book of Esther, I'm not sure that I'm not going to read the whole book here, but Esther, there were several main characters in this story here. We have the king. Ahasuerus was the king. He was a Persian king, I believe, who was had an empire that stretched from India to Ethiopia. I didn't really count or didn't really see how big of an area that was. There was 127 provinces, counties or states or whatever you want to say. So there was a lot of people here, and he governed a big area, and he was a very wealthy king. King Ahasuerus was also a man who lacked self-discipline. History would say he was a drunk, more or less. But he lacked self-discipline. He had a wife. Her name was Vashti. Vashti plays a fairly small role here, but she does play a role. Mordecai was a man who was of the Jewish race, lineage. And Mordecai was someone whose family was uprooted from the land of Israel in the first raid of Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylon king, Chaldean king. Nebuchadnezzar had gone over there in the days of Jehoiakim, or Jehoiachin, whatever, and had gotten the wise people, the people with the educated people and the rich people and the noble people, and pulled a lot of the cream of the crop out of the country and took them to Babylon. Daniel was taken in that at that time, and Mordecai's family was taken at that time as well. So Mordecai's family knew what it was like to experience pain. I believe it was far enough into it that Mordecai himself was not taken from Israel, but his family was. Another interesting thing about Mordecai is that it gives his pedigree or his lineage there, and it picks out specific people in his lineage. And one of them was that he was a son of Shimei, the son of Kish, which puts him in the... Shimei was the man, if you remember, know your Bible history. Shimei was the man who threw rocks at David when he was crossing the Jordan River, running away from Absalom. And Shimei was of the house of Saul. So Shimei was either a son, a nephew, or something of Saul. He was a son of Kish anyway, so he would have been in the same house or lineage or family of Saul. And Mordecai was a descendant. Esther was also a descendant of that branch there. And also, we have Haman. And you all know who Haman was, don't you? Haman, he was not your friendly individual that you would invite for lunch necessarily. But Haman was part of this story. And Haman was it says he was the son of Hammedatha the Agagite. Do you know who Agag was? Agag was a man that Saul was supposed to kill. And Agag was from the Amalekites. He was of the Amalekite inquire or given instructions to wipe out because of what they had done to the children of Israel as they were coming through. They find and kill the weak and the sick and just terrorize them. They were terrorists and very unkind. And God was passing judgment on them, and he gave Saul the instructions to wipe them out. And Saul didn't wipe him out. He said that he was only going to... The people saved Agag, the king, and the best of the stuff. Well, Saul's problem came back to bite the Jews in Persia. So they have Haman the Agagite. Haman was a descendant of this king that was supposed to die, that did, but somehow they weren't wiped out. And Mordecai and Esther were descendants of Saul. So here it comes back around again. Now, Esther didn't know this. Esther didn't know, and Mordecai probably didn't know, or maybe they did, but they didn't really know how God was thinking and working and how his plan for a Messiah was down the line. They didn't know this. All they knew was that their circumstances were such that they found themselves, and... Then and Ahasuerus was the king. First of all, Ahasuerus was the king, and Ahasuerus had a party. And he had a party for 6 months. Can you believe a party going on for 6 months to show everybody how rich he was? And at the end of the 6 months, he had a 7-day mega party. And he had so much wine there, and people had all his friends around there, and they were drunk as could be. And I don't know. It was not really a good place to come. Anyway, he was in his drunken way. He decided that he's going to have. He's got a really nice wife, and he wants everyone to see how nice she is. So he sends for her to come, and she says, no, she's not coming. Well, that didn't go well. And they decided that they need a new wife, because the one they had wasn't good. So they look for another wife. And they look around, and if you're the king, you just go find a wife, and you just get a whole bunch of them to come to you instead of you finding them. So he went after, he got a whole bunch of girls to come to the capital there, and he was going to find a wife. And Mordecai, I don't know why, but he decided that his niece, another character in the story I forgot, was Esther. Esther was Mordecai's cousin, actually, not her, well, some people say his niece, but his cousin. Esther was a cousin of Mordecai whose parents had died, and Esther knew what pain was like, and she knew what it was like to be lonely. But Mordecai had raised her and adopted her. So Mordecai thought Esther would be a candidate to be queen. So she went to where these other girls were at, and they went through the whatever process they went through, 6 months of beauty treatments. They went through, and Esther went through this, and when it was time for the king to decide who was going to be his queen, sure enough, he picked Esther. So Esther was the queen, but Mordecai had told her not to say who she was. Don't say that you're a Jew. Don't say anything about that. Just go and be the, and if you're the queen, then you're the queen. So that's what Esther did. She didn't tell anyone. Well, Esther was queen for about 4.5 years. And in that 4.5 years, there was Mordecai was a gate. He was part of the king's court there. He was an official of some sort in the king's court. But in that time frame, Mordecai decided overheard a plot. He heard Big Than and Teresh that they were going to kill the king. So he listens and he hears about where they're going to go, and he discovers that such and such time they're going to try to get the king over, and they're going to kill the king. You know, Big Than, he's talking about how he's going to call him over here and get him over, come to a certain place, and then they're going to kill him and all that. And Mordecai hears about this. So Mordecai decides they can't be doing this to the king. So he tells Esther this, look, they're going to do this and this and this. Esther tells the king. The king goes and invites him. They get him to come. They investigate the situation and figure out that Big Than and Teresh are guilty, very guilty. And so the king sends Big Than and Teresh to jail for a while, and then he just kills them. Can't have people like that in my court. Nope, can't do that. So Ahasuerus, he wasn't going to mess around with people that were looking to kill him. But Mordecai's name got wrote down in the book as the man who did this. And then Ahasuerus decided he needs a prime minister, and he figures out Haman's a good prime minister, so he makes him the prime minister, and Haman's all excited because Haman now is in a position to be somebody. And he wants to be somebody. So the king says, I want, you know, everyone respect Haman here and bow down or whatever you do. Respect him. And Mordecai wouldn't bow down to Haman. Oh, Haman did not like this. He was angry about this. Every time he'd go out through there, Haman would would see Mordecai, and he would be angry with him because Mordecai wouldn't bow down like everybody else did. And in all this time, here comes well, Haman was so angry with Mordecai that he wanted to kill Mordecai, but he didn't want to kill him directly. He was scheming. He had a scheming mind. And so he had this idea that he's going to kill all the Jews. You know, he figures if he can kill all the Jews, he'll get Haman or get Mordecai in there too. So here comes, he goes to the king and he gets him to write his, figure out, he wants to borrow his stamper. And so he gets his, tells him that he wants to get rid of this group of people that doesn't obey laws. He's going to be a law and order man. I'm going to be the best prime minister you've ever had. And I'm going to get rid of the guys that don't keep your laws for you. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So Haman writes it all out. Hey, write out that on such and such day they're going to kill all the Jews. And basically, he just gives, makes a hunting season for the Jews on a certain day. And he says, you can call 911 all you want, and there's no police that'll show up. We're going to get rid of them. And they stamped it with the king's stamper, and they send it out, and away they go. The post office man take the papers, and they tell everybody in all 127 provinces. See, Haman has a responsibility here. Haman is one of the characters, and he has a responsibility in life, but Haman has accountability too. So right now, Haman is exercising his choice to live and to do what he wants to. And God is letting him go. God doesn't just kill him dead right away. God is letting him make his choice. But Mordecai hears about this, and he is scared because the king has his stamp on this. Everybody gets a letter in the mail with a king's stamp on it. And Mordecai is very scared about this. You know, he's so scared that he leaves his job and he goes and he puts on sackcloth. I don't know, I mean, it's like a rough, it's like feed bags. He puts old feed bags on. And he smears his hair and it smears his face with ashes. And he's just making, looks like a bum out on the street. He's just crying and crying, and the king won't let him come into the court like that. So he's got to stay out there. And Esther finds out that Haman has got, is doing that. Not Haman. Mordecai is doing this. And she sends a messenger to him with new clothes. And he won't take the clothes. He sends a message back to Esther telling her to go to the king because he says that God has, who knows, but that God has put you in this place for this very time. That God looked ahead and he saw this and put you in this place for this very time. Now remember, this was almost 5 years prior that Esther was made queen. And Haman wasn't even prime minister 5 years ago. So God had worked it out like this. And Esther, there was some back and forth there, but she decided she's going to go to the king, even though the king had a law that if she comes in there and he doesn't want to see her, he can kill her. And she thought this might be the end of her life. But I don't know. A marriage like they had there was very not good. Because it says that the king, it was 30 days since she had seen the king. So wives, I mean, would you like husbands that only showed up every 30 days? You could see, I know one that wouldn't like it, but I'm sure there's others too. But she was the king's wife, but she could also be killed if she came in when he didn't want her to come into his throne room or wherever he was at. But she decided that whatever the cost, she's going to do it because she has a responsibility. She has a responsibility and she has a choice to make in this responsibility. Even though for her, she's somewhat insulated from the others because nobody knows in the king's house that she's a Jew. But Mordecai said that that's not going to save you in the end. But your responsibility is to go to the king, whether it costs you your life. So she says, well, proclaim a fast for 3 days, pray, and I'll do it. So that's what they did. And she went to the king, and the king held out his scepter. And she was very, very happy about that, because now she can live again. But she had the king and Haman. She's going to make him a meal and have him come. And so they came and had this meal. Haman was so happy. He left out of there just as happy as he could be. Things are looking up. You know, my circumstances are good, says Haman. Things are looking up. So he goes out of the inner court and he goes to the outer court and he sees Mordecai there. And things are not looking up now. So Mordecai is not bowing down like everybody else did. Well, he said, things are looking up good enough. I'm going to go home and we'll fix the problem. Or no, I'm going to go home and tell my wife about it. So he has a meeting at home and he tells everybody how things are looking up for him and how rich he is and how he's made all this money and the king has made him his best man. And he's just bragging about himself, but he said, I can't do it, can't become fully great until Mordecai's out of the way. And his wife says, oh, I know how to fix that. She said, just build a gallows. And make it big so everybody can see it. Oh, yeah, that's good. So Haman, he gets his phone out. He calls up a few workmen. They come over there, and they build this big, tall post with a rope on it. They call it a gallows. It was 75 feet tall. So they build it on his property there. But Haman couldn't just, even though he was prime minister, he couldn't just go and snatch Mordecai out. He had to go get permission. So they got it all done pretty fast because, you know, from one night to the next, they had this gallows done. So early in the morning, Haman goes over there to get permission from the king. So he goes over there in the morning, but he didn't realize, but the king had a bad night. Maybe the king had bellyache. I don't know what happened. He ate something he shouldn't have eaten. And he was having a bad night. And the king was rolling this way and that way. And the king's circumstances weren't good either. He was feeling poorly. And they started reading. He wanted something to read. So they read him about how Mordecai had saved him from death. And he got to thinking, his mind starts thinking, you know, did we ever do anything for Mordecai? No, we didn't, nothing. So, he says, what kind of a king am I if I can't reward somebody who saved my life? Ah, he said, I can't do that. That's probably why I'm feeling so bad. Never mind that, yeah. So they told him, well, Haman's here to see you now. He said, oh, well, good, 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 bring him in here. And they asked Haman. Haman was so angry about Mordecai. He had come. He wanted to get this business over with and have Mordecai dead by noon. But King said, "What do you want, Haman?" Or no, he said, "Haman, what shall I do for somebody that I want to honor very much?" Oh, so Haman's mind starts thinking ahead. Remember, he has a scheming brain, so he's scheming about all kinds of things. Oh, he says, who would the king want to honor more than me? I'm his best man. So he gets a grand scheme about making him look like a king. Looking like the king would be the best thing for himself. Yep, he said, get your car out, get your robe, your crown, make him look just like you. And then have the most trusted servant go ahead with loudspeakers through town and just make him feel like the king. So the king said, that's a good idea, Haman. I would have never thought of that. That's good. So they went. Or the king said, you know what, Haman? You are my most trusted servant. He said, Mordecai saved my life. I want you to go take him and do that for me. Uh-oh. Haman's plan was falling apart already. Do you think he turned the volume down on the loudspeaker just so it didn't work so good? Maybe he cut a wire or something. I don't know. But Haman went through. He had to do it, and he went through, and oh, it just made him feel so terrible. Here, Mordecai, he's there looking like the king, and here's Haman saying, "This is what shall be done for the man the king delights to honor. This is what shall be done for the man the king delights to honor." And he went all through town, did exactly what the king said, and he went home, and it says he covered his face, and he went home. He felt so bad about this. Haman comes home. He tells his wife about the disgrace, and she's like, uh-oh. Haman, if you start this process, it's bad for you. Well, what can you say? You know, Mordecai being a Jew, if this happens, and it's not going to happen, it's not going to end well for you. Well, about that time, he was pouting about this. The messengers came and tell him it's time for supper. So he goes over there with the king, and Esther, the king says, "Esther, what do you want? What is this? This, you're not just inviting us for supper for anyhow. What is it?" And she just said, "I want you to save my life. Just save my life." And the king says, "What? Who's trying to kill you?" And she said, "It's this guy right here. It's Haman. He's wanting to kill me. And he's wanting to kill all my people." Oh, the king was angry. He all of a sudden felt like he'd been taken advantage of. And nobody likes to be taken advantage of. And the king did not like it. He goes out to the garden and he's stomping and throwing things and hitting the wall. And he's angry. He is so angry. And Haman sees he's in a bad place. He already got stuck with Mordecai this morning. And now the king isn't looking very nice towards him. And he starts, and he just falls down and starts pleading for his life. And the king comes in there and sees him there. And he says, "What are you doing here now? You're going to try to hurt the queen again? And he was angry. And the servants come in. And they, one of them, he had seven trusted servants. And one of his seven trusted servants came in and they said, I don't know if they liked Haman very much. I don't know. I'm just thinking. But one of them said, "Hey, he built a gallows for Mordecai. Good for him," he said, says Ahasuerus. He said, "Just go stick him on there. That'll be good. Hang Haman high," he said. So they hauled him off, and they took him over there and hung Haman up. And Mordecai, or Ahasuerus, he said, "You know what? Esther, you can have his property. You can have all his property." Do you think that Haman's wife was happy to have Esther be the new landlord? I don't think so. I don't know what happened with her, but I don't think she wanted to show her face in town again. And anyway, so they worked it out where Mordecai became the new prime minister, and Mordecai and Esther wrote a new law with the king's stamper that said that the Jews could actually defend themselves. They just wrote basically the same law that Haman did, but made it in such a way that the Jews had the same privileges. And because it was the last law that was written with the king's thing and the last letter that came in the mail, it scared the neighbors so bad that a lot of them became Jews. And it the Jews were saved. But the thing that I'd like to point out is that Mordecai was faithful in his responsibility. You know, he proved his loyalty when the servants were giving them their were hatching this plot. He proved his loyalty by reporting it by saving the king's life. He made that choice in his circumstance there. He also, Esther, in her responsibility, she could have felt that she had attained. If she would have had the attitude that Haman did, Esther, in her position as queen, if she had Haman's attitude, could have destroyed the Jewish race by not doing anything, by just watching out for herself. But Esther unselfishly fulfilled her responsibility. In the place where she was at, she fulfilled her responsibility there, with the effect that it saved her people. Haman had a responsibility as well. And accountability came for Haman in the form of public disgrace, humiliation, and the loss of his life. And how is it for us? You know, we find ourselves in circumstances today. We find ourselves with the time that we're given, with opportunities that come our way. We find ourselves in a position to make choices and to exercise responsibilities without immediate consequences. But are we able to see that accountability is coming and God will open the book and he will give every man according to his work? That's what it says in Revelation. So with the freedom that we have and the knowledge that we have of the accountability that's coming, or the test results, we could say, it should inspire us to be faithful in with the talents, with what we've been given as we go through life. You know, for each one of us, wherever we find ourselves, in good circumstances or bad, we are all called to the kingdom for such a time as this, just like Esther was. And I'd like to leave that challenge with each one of us today. As we go through life, this tomorrow, today, make the choices as one who is a child of God and as one who is called for such a time as this. So let's stand for prayer. Our Father, thank you.